This week on Making Contact.
Today I speak with you about a radical idea. It is one born from the very concept of the American soldier, that to stop an illegal and unjust war, the soldiers and service members can choose to stop fighting it.
The fourth anniversary of the Iraq War is upon us. Since the war began, more than 8,000 members of the U.S. military are officially unaccounted for, and many others are publicly opposing the war and refusing to deploy. Lieutenant Aaron Watada is among them. He's the first Army officer to be tried for refusing to deploy to Iraq. On this edition, Making Contact's Aaron Glantz sheds light on the events and issues surrounding the recent court-martial of Lieutenant Watada. I'm Tina Rubio, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, battle ideas, and important information.
It's a rainy Sunday night in Tacoma, Washington, and hundreds of people have crowded into a church basement to show their support for First Lieutenant Aaron Watada, the first commissioned officer to face prison for refusing to serve in Iraq. The next day, Lieutenant Watada would go before a military court-martial at nearby Fort Lewis. Among the speakers, retired Army Colonel and Ambassador Anne Wright, who quit the diplomatic corps over her objection to the Iraq War.
I've been here so many times. And so many times for justice and for conscience and for principle, for Aaron Watada, who will be court-martialed tomorrow for standing up on the principles of ending a war in Iraq, ending an illegal war. It's something that I resigned my career over as a State Department, and of course I support anyone that stands up to this administration and the illegal war in Iraq and, of course, the pending illegal war on Iran. We are the ones that really ought to be carrying this load. We've got these military folks who are putting their lives in jeopardy. I mean, in jeopardy of going to jail, standing up for principle, saying, I will not be a part of that. We've got to get this war stopped so these folks won't have to go to jail for saying, I refuse to compromise my conscience.
Lieutenant Watada faces 6 years in prison for refusing to fight in the Iraq War. That's because he wasn't charged only with refusing to deploy, but also for conduct unbecoming of an officer and a gentleman. The military maintained that his public statements were disgraceful. Statements like the keynote address he gave at the group Veterans for Peace's annual convention in Seattle in August 2006.
I stand before you today not as an expert, not as one who pretends to have all the answers. I am simply an American and a servant of the American people. My humble opinions today are just that. I realize that you may not agree with everything I have to say. However, I did not choose to be a leader to be popular. I did it to serve and make better the soldiers of this country. And I swore to carry out this charge honorably under the rule of law. Today I speak with you about a radical idea. It is one born from the very concept of the American soldier, or the service member. It became instrumental in ending the Vietnam War, but it has long been since forgotten. The idea is this, that to stop an illegal and unjust war, the soldiers and service members can choose to stop fighting it. Now, it is not an easy task for the soldier, for he or she must be aware that they are being used for ill gain. They must hold themselves responsible for individual action. They must remember duty to the Constitution and the people supersedes the ideologies of their leadership. The soldier must be willing to face ostracism by their peers, worry over the survival of their families, and of course, the loss of personal freedom. They must know that resisting an authoritarian government at home is equally important to fighting a foreign aggressor on the battlefield. Finally, those wearing the uniform must know beyond any shadow of a doubt that by refusing immoral and illegal orders, they will be supported by the people not with mere words, but by action. The American soldier must rise above the socialization that tells them authority should always be obeyed without question. Rank should be respected, but never blindly followed. Amen. Awareness of the history of atrocities and destruction committed in the name of America, either through direct military intervention or by proxy war, is crucial. They must realize that this is a war not out of self-defense, but by choice, for profit and imperialistic domination. WMD, ties to Al-Qaeda, and ties to 9/11 never existed, and they never will. The soldier must know that our narrowly and questionably elected officials intentionally manipulated the evidence presented to Congress, the public, and the world to make the case for war. They must know that neither Congress nor this administration has the authority to violate the prohibition against preemptive war, an American law that still stands today. This same administration uses us for rampant violations of time-tested laws banning torture and degradation of prisoners of war. Though the American soldier wants to do right, the illegitimacy of the occupation itself, the policies of this administration, and the rules of engagement of desperate field commanders will ultimately force them to be party to war crimes. "I was only following orders" is never an excuse.
Court-martial at Fort Lewis, a U.S. military prosecutor argued Lieutenant Watada's statements were offensive to the military. His direct superior, Lieutenant Colonel Bruce Antonia, said Lieutenant Watada lacked the information necessary to question the commander-in-chief. Another superior, Lieutenant Colonel William James, testified that Lieutenant Watada's public comments opposing the Iraq War, quote, lowered morale by creating a lot of discussion in the chow hall when soldiers should have been zeroing in their weapons and kissing their wives goodbye. In his defense, Watada had hoped to argue before the court that the war is immoral and illegal and that he would have been committing war crimes if he led his troops into battle. He based his defense on the Nuremberg Principles, which arose from the trials of Nazi war criminals after World War II.
At Nuremberg, it held that war making was no longer a national right, it was an international crime.
88-year-old Benjamin Ferenz was one of the chief prosecutors at Nuremberg. He secured convictions for 22 Nazi officials for their work in orchestrating the death squads that killed more than 1 million people.
The Nuremberg judgments laid down certain fundamental principles, and it was a link with the Charter of the United Nations at that time, seeking a more peaceful world. The Charter was very explicit. It specifically prohibits the use of armed force, except under very restricted circumstances of self-defense against an armed attack, or when authorized by the Security Council of the United Nations. The United States went to war without those two conditions having been met. The United States was not attacked by Iraq. The United Nations Security Council did not come up with a resolution authorizing what subsequently happened. As a result, it's a clear violation of the United Nations Charter, which is binding law.
Still, Ferenc says it was a stretch for Lieutenant Watada to use Nuremberg as a defense. He says the Nuremberg Principles were designed for generals and high-ranking officials who planned illegal acts, not enlisted personnel or junior officers like Lieutenant Watada.
If he's ordered to commit an illegal act, if the captain orders the soldier to shoot the colonel, and he does so, he's going to be in trouble. And if he refuses to do so, he's okay, because it's clearly an illegal act of murder, and he is not obliged to obey illegal orders. But he is not empowered to make that determination for himself if the situation is not that clear.
The judge, Lieutenant Colonel John Head, agreed, throwing out Lieutenant Watada's entire defense and rejecting a long list of witnesses Lieutenant Watada had hoped to call, including international law experts, a former member of the CIA, and a former Marine Corps prosecutor. Head ruled each of those witnesses, quote, irrelevant to the charges filed against Lieutenant Watada.
This is a typical kind of a military case where the military doesn't want to hear what you want to say, and we're battling to say even the simplest things.
Watada's attorney, Eric Seitz.
This case has gone just about the way that we expected that it would go, that we would raise substantive defenses which have a great deal of merit to them, and which are of interest to a lot of people, and the judge would deny all of our efforts to present them in open court. That we would seek to call witnesses, many of whom are very, very highly regarded scholars in the subject matters for which we would offer their testimony, and that all of them, every single one of them as of today, has been precluded and will not be allowed to testify. That we would try to make arguments to enable us to present the kind of defense for Lieutenant Ouattara to which we believe he is entitled, and that all of those arguments would be rejected.
Stripped of his own witnesses and his plans for defense, Attorney Eric Seitz mounted aggressive cross-examination of the government witnesses. Jeff Millard is an Iraq War veteran who covered the trial for the website truthout.org. He explains what happened when the government called Lieutenant Colonel Bruce Antonia, Aaron Ouattara's battalion commander.
The first witness was a disaster for the prosecution. He may as well have been a defense witness. He clearly stated that any officer who has a moral conflict should side with their morals and not accept the order. He clearly stated that Lieutenant Ouattara's decision not to go to Iraq had no effect on the morale of the unit, and it had no effect on the unit's performance in combat. And so he could have easily been a defense witness.
The prosecution's next witness was Dr. Richard Swain, an ethics instructor from West Point. Again, Jeff Millard, Iraq War veteran and journalist with the website truthout.org.
Dr. Swain was pretty ineffective, too. He clearly, again, drew the line of legal and moral and clearly stated that if an officer, if he has a conflict of morals and orders, that he's to side with his moral beliefs and take the consequences of that, which is exactly what Lieutenant Ouattara has done. So again, very at best for the prosecution, that was a neutral witness.
The prosecutor's final witness was Lieutenant Colonel William James, Lieutenant Ouattara's brigade commander.
Colonel James was an effective witness in the sense that he said that he lost trust and faith in Lieutenant Ouattara, and after making public statements that he would not be able to command, especially command in Iraq. And so he was effective to that degree, but he was very ineffective in that he painted himself, first of all, as very biased. He said that the statements themselves he disagreed with, and they made him very angry, which definitely painted himself as biased. But also at the same time, he talked about mentoring and morality, and he actually made the statement that he would want his officers to follow their morals.
After calling Lieutenant Colonel James, the prosecution rested, and Lieutenant Ouattara's supporters expressed cautious optimism. Jeff Patterson is a former Marine who refused to fight in the first Gulf War. He attended the court-martial, reporting on it for the website CourageToResist.org.
All the prosecution witnesses stood up there and said, military service is important, oaths are important. But on cross-examination, they outlined how Lieutenant Ouattara, you know, was trying to fulfill his oath. He was very sincere. He came to them with his applications for a resignation of service, as an officer would do in such a situation. And all of them, and you know, like one expert came all the way from West Point to talk about the importance of oaths. But under cross-examination, he's like, well, of course, you know, you can't follow illegal orders. And even if this order turns out not to be technically illegal under this jurisdiction, you still have a responsibility to yourself to not follow immoral orders. So the prosecution witness talked about the importance of, you know, not following immoral orders regardless of the consequence to yourself.
Supporters of Aaron Ouattara were also optimistic because the government's witnesses had testified that the young lieutenant's intent was important. That meant that when Ouattara took the stand, the judge would be forced to allow him to speak about why he refused to go to Iraq, testimony that might potentially sway the military jury.
We'll have more in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org.
On Wednesday morning, the courtroom at Fort Lewis was filled with anticipation. The prosecution had rested, and Aaron Watada was poised to take the stand in his own defense. But before that could happen, the judge, Lieutenant Colonel John Head, surprised everyone by calling a mistrial. It was over an agreement Lieutenant Watada signed, admitting that he failed to deploy to Iraq, as well as confirming that he gave several anti-war speeches for which the military had charged him with conduct unbecoming of an officer. Colonel Head called the agreement a confession, but in exchanges with the judge in open court, Lieutenant Watada disagreed. "Your Honor," Watada said, "I have always believed that I have a legal right and moral defense. I realize that the government can make arguments and you can make rulings contrary to that, but that does not negate my belief that I have a defense." Joe Peek is a spokesperson for Fort Lewis.
"The military judge ensures fairness in the proceedings, especially to the accused. In this case, the judge was concerned that the stipulation amounted to a confession by Lieutenant Watada to an offense to which he intended to plead not guilty. Throughout the military justice process, the Army steadfastly protects the rights of the accused and potential witnesses, and it affords soldiers extensive rights to ensure a fair and impartial process, just as in the civilian court system. The judge's ruling today in this case provides further evidence of that."
Peek told reporters a new trial for Aaron Watada will be set for sometime this spring, but Watada's lawyer, Eric Seitz, said there can be no new trial. Since the prosecution had already called witnesses, Seitz told reporters, putting the lieutenant on trial again would mean putting Watada on trial twice for the same crime, which is forbidden by the Constitution. Seitz said the government hurt its own case by seeking to exclude Watada's reasons for refusing to deploy.
"Every time the government has tried to prevent political speech, which they're attempting to punish, from infusing the trial proceedings, it has created a major mess. And many of those cases resulted in mistrials."
Seitz mentioned a few famous cases that he has handled over the years, including the famous 1969 Chicago conspiracy trial, where seven peace activists, including Tom Hayden and Bobby Seale, were charged with crossing state lines with the intent to incite anti-war riots and disrupt the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago.
"The government tried artificially and for their own political motivations to prevent the defendants from explaining why they were there and what they did. That happened in this case, and this is just another example of what I consider to be an ill-advised effort to keep those issues out of these proceedings, when in fact they are the core issues that led to the defendant being there in the first place."
In the meantime, out-of-court negotiations between Lieutenant Watada's attorneys and government lawyers will continue. For his part, Lieutenant Watada will remain on duty at Fort Lewis, continuing his service at a desk job he's held since refusing to deploy to Iraq. His mother, Carolyn Ho, says her son was ready to go to prison over his opposition to the war. When she learned he was still free after the military judge ruled a mistrial, tears streamed down her cheeks.
"He was quite prepared to vacate his apartment. It's been all packed up, and we were arranging to have his furniture moved on Monday. The expectation was that he would be sentenced and that there would be incarceration."
Anti-war activists had their own reading of why Lieutenant Watada's trial ended abruptly. Again, Jeff Patterson of the group Courage to Resist.
"That the military wanted to avoid showing to all the other people, all the other troops who are facing a second and third, fourth deployment to Iraq, is that if you don't go to Iraq and you speak out, you'll have 1,000 people rally to your defense, pay all your legal bills, Sean Penn will hang out with you, or, and go to prison for a few months, or do you go to Iraq?" And I think some people would go for that deal of the public support and spending a few months in prison instead of Iraq. This way, in the end, the military will say, "Hey, this is a lucky bum who beat a rap on a technicality. Don't you think you're going to get so lucky by not going to Iraq?"
Jeff Millard, Iraq war veteran and journalist, with the website truthout.org.
"The military doesn't want the American public to know what that soldiers are talking about this in the barracks. That and some soldiers think he's a disgrace, and others think he's a freaking hero. But what it's causing is soldiers to discuss, to debate, and what's really frightening to people in this administration is that it's soldiers are thinking. They don't want soldiers to think. They want soldiers to follow orders."
"We fought Saddam's regime, and we conquered it. And that's not it now. And you can feel it. You can see it. You can see it in your terps. You can see it in your the Iraqi forces that you're training. I don't know. I saw it as a senseless and tragic waste of life, to be honest.
Staff Sergeant Don Hanks served 15 years in the Army before leaving the military after his first tour in Iraq. Like Watata, Hanks was stationed at Fort Lewis. While Watata's court-martial was still going on, Hanks wrote an email to this reporter. I was 5 years from retirement and chose to end my career rather than serve another tour. I struggle every day to live with some of the things that I have seen or done, he wrote. So do my friends, those I have left. Who speaks for them? I hope you have read this, can feel the emotion and the pain.
I lost friends over there, and some of those friends I'd had for my whole freaking adult life. You know, and you're over at their houses, and you're barbecuing with their kids, and, you know, you get to know them and their families, and then just one day they're not there anymore because of something really bad. You know, and the, I don't know, it's just a really sad experience.
Hanks said he knew of at least 4 soldiers from Fort Lewis who had gone AWOL rather than fight in the Iraq War. Some had returned and were awaiting punishment by court-martial. Others were still on the lam. U.S. military records show that between 8 and 10,000 soldiers are currently unaccounted for. Among them are hundreds of anti-war soldiers who fled to Canada. Michael Wong is a social worker and member of the group Veterans for Peace, who escaped to Canada rather than fight in the Vietnam War. He said a GA Rights hotline set up to help soldiers who want to get out of Iraq or out of the Army is now fielding 2,000 calls a month.
There are GIs that are looking for an out, that are rebelling against the military in different ways. Even in Iraq, there are GIs having their own blogs, blogging against the war while they're actually, you know, in Iraq. You know, I can't speak for his unit specifically, but I can speak for the fact that GI resistance is growing.
One soldier who fled and then turned himself in was Specialist Mark Wilkerson. In late February, Wilkerson was sentenced to 7 months in military prison for going AWOL to avoid serving a second tour. He said he changed his mind about the morality of the war during his first deployment to Iraq, which lasted from the fall of Baghdad until the middle of 2004. He spoke to Making Contact before turning himself in at Fort Hood in Texas.
Well, Iraq was, I think most soldiers can agree with me, it was a very scary time. You were never sure when or where an attack was going to come from. You were on your guard at all times. When I first got there, I was very supportive of what our mission was there. I was very supportive of our president's decision to go in. And then after being there for a while and seeing people who I knew killed and injured, it started to make me question if what we were doing there was really important enough for people to be dying. Not only American soldiers, but Iraqi civilians as well.
Before going AWOL, Wilkerson had applied for conscientious objector status, but that request was denied. And so today, Mark Wilkerson is behind bars. He will be released in September.
There comes a time in every person's life when they have to make what they feel is the right moral decision for themselves, regardless of what others think or how others feel. So I went with my heart and I followed my conscience, and I refused to go back a second time to Iraq because, for me, it was not worth me killing anyone or being killed for reasons I don't believe in.
The case of Army medic Agustin Aguayo is also working its way through the military justice system. Like Wilkerson, Aguayo served one tour in Iraq and went AWOL rather than go a second time. Aguayo faces 7 years in prison. He escaped through a window on his base in Germany to avoid being sent a second time. His wife Helga spoke in that church basement in Tacoma on the eve of Lieutenant Watata's court-martial.
How can the Army justify someone facing 7 years after he followed the regulations, after he deployed to Iraq, after he went to Iraq for a year and never loaded his gun? And even though the Army regulation states that they're supposed to give them duties which least conflict with their conscience, he was given patrol duty, guard duty, without ever putting bullets in his gun. And then on September 1st, my husband refused to deploy again after telling them for almost 3 years at that point that he would never go back, because he went to Iraq once knowing that he couldn't kill, but after being in Iraq, He said, I will never go back, never support this, never be a part of it.
Augustine Aguayo's court-martial is scheduled to take place on a U.S. military base in Würzburg, Germany. For Making Contact, I'm Aaron Glantz.
Was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King or Gandhi set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand.
Lieutenant Watata's second court-martial is scheduled for July 16th. He faces the same charges as last time, missing movement, and conduct unbecoming an officer. If convicted, Watata could be sentenced to 6 years in prison and be dishonorably discharged.
You law-abiding citizens, listen to this song. Laws were made by people, and people can be wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote, and children worked the mine. The more you study history, the less you can deny it. A rotten law stays on the books till folks like us defy it. And folks like Aaron Watata. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. Oh, the law's supposed to serve us, and so are the police. When that system fails, it's up to us to speak our peace. It takes eternal vigilance for justice to prevail. So get courage from your convictions. Let them haul you off to jail. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Will you go to jail for justice? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine.
Ann Feeney singing Have You Been to Jail for Justice. That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to Dan Turner, Ronald Recker, and Steve Macer. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. For a CD copy of program number 1107, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736 or go to radioproject.org. Lisa Redman is our executive director, Dorian Taylor communications manager, Philip Babich mixing engineer, Alexis McCrimmon intern, and I'm your host and senior producer, Tina Rubio. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.